Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Quick aside before we get to our three-point stances, a report on ESPN right now on my television screen here in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon, says that Giannis looked into trade conversations this offseason, and the only team that really emerged was the Knicks.
That bought.
Oh, my God. If you had put Giannis on the Knicks, that would have been so.
Can you imagine?
I hate Giannis. I hate the Knicks. It would have been perfect.
Would have been great. That's prime time.
Well, until they whooped the Celtics' ass, and then it would have sucked.
That would have sucked.
That would not have been fun.
Nope. They would have been unstoppable. I would have said instant Eastern Conference favorite.
They'd be stoppable.
By who?
What's he ever won? I mean, what's he ever won beyond
other than
one?
That championship? Peter Schrager? Yeah, okay.
In dominant fashion where he then
right,
went
he's
to...
got rings.
Then
just
he went to... Hey, Eric. Where did he go afterwards? Eric, where did he go? Oh, Chick-fil-A.
Did he?
Yeah, he bought, like, Chick-fil-A for literally, like, everybody.
I like a good Chick-fil-A. They just built one in Dartmouth, and people are, like, waiting 30 minutes to go to it, and I'm like, no.
The lines are out of control.
I'm not waiting for a chicken
sandwich. Their
marketing
is among the best that I've ever seen for
This is squirrel-tastic, but I do want to say I would like to get my hands on that new, like, bacon chicken pretzel sandwich that they're doing. The spicy edition, have you seen that? The little pretzel bun.
I'm not waiting 30 minutes
for it.
It was all individual pieces that sound great. So together, I'm sure it's fantastic, Nick.
Just like this show.
And oh. I would eat it as long as it's available in the usual 5 to 7 minutes and not 30 minutes
in a Chick-fil-A?
Yeah. And they're like,
Popeyes is right around the corner.
Oh, and I love Popeyes. I actually think Popeyes is better, but that's a different topic for a different day. It is 3 o'clock, and it is time for the three-point stance.
319!
Ready!
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as 1, 2, 3.
Boston up! A hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer and the game is tied!
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or your head coach is a salty biatch, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in Boston sports and beyond. Andy Hart, you will lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance, and I ask you, are you ready for that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Here is 60 seconds. Go ahead.
So yesterday, the leadership of the Boston Red Sox met with the media. Alex Cora, as you don't normally see him, dressed up in a suit jacket up there with Sam Kennedy and Craig Breslow, talking about the season that was, but more importantly, talking about the offseason that is upon us. Yes, we wanted them to go deeper in the playoffs. We all knew they were flawed and weren't going to win a World Series. Now we can get to the good stuff. Because they have put together the foundation. And I know there's opt-outs and some muddy waters in there with some injuries and different things. But the reality is you're a playoff team. You're a playoff team that started something that now needs to be added to. And that is why I'm so excited about this offseason. Whether it's seeing how the young players develop, seeing if Peyton Tolley can develop a secondary pitch, figuring out if Connelly Early is one of your top starters, just how good he can be, and just how good Roman Anthony can be, and maybe Marcelo Meyer, he can stay healthy. It's also fun that we're talking about big-time free agents again. I saw our guy Bradfo on WEEI.com starting the promotion of Pete Alonso. Go get him. Great idea, Bradfo. Kyle Schwarber, great idea. Kyle Tucker, I actually don't really care specifically who it is, but the fact that the Sox are good and chasing elite big-money talent this offseason, all's right in the hot stove league.
Yeah, Red Sox fever shouldn't dissipate just because they petered out offensively against the Yankees last week. It's disappointing that they got bumped in the wild card round. It's a bummer that it was against the Yankees. And yeah, it would be nice to see them playing this week because I think they could have given Toronto a better series. More on that in just a moment. But don't lose your faith in Fenway. Like, this should be an offseason that builds with a crescendo towards next season where they can really get after it.
The Red Sox are now in the position the Celtics were in about 4 years ago, where you kind of knew who your mainstay tent poles were in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and you were a playoff team and you were chasing a title, and you were getting to the Eastern Conference Finals and all that, and you needed to get over the hump. Mm-hmm. And then they went out and made the additions that got them over the hump, that made them the championship basketball
then
team.
Then that begets the question, who will be their Porzingis? Who will be their Holiday?
I don't know, but I think Pete Alonso or Kyle Schwarber is a nice start. One of those guys. And then the best part is you're still just building around your core. Your Tatum and Brown is now your Anthony and your Crochet and your Narvaez and these young guys that are part of your organization forever.
We haven't even seen Roman Anthony barely played half a season. He was on his way towards having a hell of a two-thirds of a season until he got hurt, obviously. Meyer injured. We haven't seen all of these guys play a full season together, let alone with the reinforcements we would like them to add.
The Red Sox, I'm getting greedy now. I'm going to say the Red Sox should not miss the playoffs in the next 5 years. They should go to the playoffs each and every season for the next 5 years. That's where I am. I know it's not quite the proclamation of Drake May is going to be in the Patriots Hall of Fame, but I think the Red Sox, with the youth they have, the finances they have, and they told me resources are not an issue. Craig Breslow said resources not an issue. The resources will be invested in this baseball team 5 straight years, six straight years if you include last year playoffs.
Dan, which member of the Red Sox do you think will get a red jacket for the Patriots Hall of Fame?
Ooh, that's a great question. I know Connor Wong is absolutely. Oh, David Hamilton. Obviously, well, yes. It's David Hamilton.
No, I mean, the answer, if you're going to make the comparison, the answer is Roman Anthony. The guy who was compared to only Ted Williams, basically, and that is the guy that should be a Red Sox Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
So if you want me to say a real answer, not your cockamamie make fun of Andy answer, Roman Anthony's going to be a Red Sox Hall of Famer.
No, we're just joking about something absurd that you said. That's what Fitzy and I are doing.
Yes. Genius walks alone and is often referred to as absurd.
Well, sometimes, nope. No, you see, now you can't add on to it. That's not
allowed. It's getting a little long.
It's really getting elaborate.
So what I'm gleaning from the both of you guys before we move to Fitzy's, because it's also baseball related, you guys are trusting that it will not just be lip service that they have the assets to add significant players. This is the year where, okay, we go. We reinvest
yes.
in some established veteran talent that helps us win in the playoffs.
Yeah, whether it's a Pete Alonso signing
yep.
or it's the Joe Ryan trade that everybody keeps teasing they're going to revisit and could happen, I believe, yes, they will add a all-star caliber player to this roster. And I also think they're going to try to keep Bregman, and I think they're going to try to do some things there, and then they'll probably have other fun moves like Duran, unless I guess he's involved in the Ryan trade.
He's involved in the Ryan trade. And also, by the way,
I'm Minnesota. I don't know that
we
I want
keep talking
Duran.
About fine.
Why? So I can have to pay him in a year? Like, it didn't really make sense for
There's
him.
So much conversation about Joe Ryan. Minnesota knows, like, all right, the phone call's coming. It's just going to be a matter of, will they agree to our inflated terms? Because if I'm the Twins, knowing how badly the Sox are lusting after Joe Ryan, I'm asking for the moon and the next closest planet.
So we found out yesterday that Dan Ball has a burner phone. We found Marcelo Meyer's burner phone. I believe it's the 774 that says, you guys are way underestimating Marcelo. Yeah, if he finishes a season, maybe I'll overestimate him.
I just said we haven't seen him play a full season with Anthony yet.
That's part of the underestimation. If he finished a year, that'd be nice.
By the way, yesterday we found out that Zach Kor has a burner phone.
Oh, yeah.
That's
hardcore.
What we learned. Absolutely.
How about this one? Here we go. Oh, 617. Yep. Red Sox are ready to burn some cash.
And we got Gerard Mayo's burner phone.
And also another 617. Jaren Duran is your Marcus Smart. It's time to trade him.
It's actually a good comparison.
That's not
like
a bad comp at all.
Love that. Really
That's actually
do.
A good comparison. And if you bring me a Porzingis in the deal, I'm happy. A unicorn?
Who's your Porzingis? Who
I don't
is
know.
It?
That's for Brezbot to figure out.
Maybe it's like Tatis or somebody who's like not fitting in San Diego. Go get a big bat.
All right, settle down, Dan Ball.
That's
I know you like Tatis.
That's Fitzy knows. That's the guy I've been preaching for months. AJ Preller, he loves Jaron Duran. It's Duran plus, and Fernando Tatis is the right-handed bat you've been
missing. Talk to me, Goose. That's what's up.
And your shortstop of the future, so you can move Trevor Story and his defensive
your
issues
over to second.
Your shortstop
of the future is a handsome man with large paws that just happened to have gotten a wrist injury. He's ready to go. His blank is ready to go now, Jack.
Well, so Meyer can play it for the first 3 months of the year, and then Tatis can play it at the end of the year when Meyer's not available.
Yeah, exactly. Nailed it. There you go. Perfect. World Series is back on. Cue the duck boats. Speaking,
I got
of
this,
teams,
boys.
Okay, thank you, Brett. Speaking of teams that are playing for World Series, this is Nick Fitzy Stevens. You get 60 seconds now. Are you ready?
Indeed. Can you hit the music, please, Stanley?
The hell are we doing?
All right. What are we doing? We're playing some music to rally the troops tonight, Andy, because in order to achieve the success and the schadenfreude that we want in the States, we have to look to the North, the true North Star that is the Toronto Blue Jays, your American League East champions, the team that rightly represents, well, all hope in the American League tonight, for they can go to the Bronx, led by Shane Bieber, a pitcher discarded by the formerly playoff-bound Cleveland Guardians, and end the nightmare, the local, the regional, the national nightmare that is these fraudulent New York Yankees being further involved in the postseason. Carlos Rodon, who we let off the hook full Denny Green style last week, is on the bump for the Yanks. Stanton, he's got nothing. Aaron Judge, he's a postseason fraud. If you can make your way through a little Bellinger and a splash of Chisholm, guess what? You should be able to take it to them just like you did, oh, neighbors of the North, last week. So, Toronto, on behalf of Red Sox Nation and so many other baseball fan bases, please, tonight, do us all the collective favor of hosting a Yankee elimination party in their house.
We're all Blue Jays fans, huh?
We are all Blue Jays fans!
The sky is not falling. I already apologized for that. I didn't know, John Schneider, that you were pulling the right strings and saying the right things.
Unfamiliar with his game.
Got it done. 23 runs, don't lie.
Nope.
That's an impressive output.
Did you see Vlad Guerrero's Grand Slam?
Yeah.
It may not have landed.
Well, the guy is paid somewhere in the range of $500 million. So those are the kind of things you pay for.
$500 million players, especially. Yeah. But the Yankees have not been able to. I don't understand. Obviously, Cora tried to pull all the right strings. He had some didn't work. And save for like the Red Sox finding a way to lose last week. And of course, the epic performance of Walpole's own Schlittler in game 3. Aaron Boone kept trying to find ways to lose that series. He has a knack for putting in the wrong reliever at the right time. All the time. The right, meaning like the right time for the other team. It's the wrong guy for his team, but it's the right guy for
the opponent. Yeah, that's why most Yankees fans despise him and want him gone, and most people believe Cashman may not have the cojones to do it. It's his buddy. He's all in with him.
Right. He's come up short for years upon years now.
Right. If I'm a Red Sox fan, based on what I just said,
please go nowhere.
If you're going to be in the playoffs the next 5 years, you might have to play the Yankees. I want Boone in that dugout managing that baseball team because it only helps my chances to advance further in the postseason, which they should have this year. But this is what we're left with, rooting for the freaking Blue Jays to do what we couldn't do.
Andy, the enemy of my enemy is my ally.
Absolutely.
Good question from the text line, by the way. It crosses sports, but it's relevant or germane to our conversation. If you could only have Drake May or Roman Anthony for the next 10 years, who would it be?
That's easy. Drake May. Drake May, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
Drake May. I mean, the quarterback, and this is no shot at Roman Anthony. I think he's a great player. But if you have, I said it to you the other day, quarterback and coach, if you have that quarterback, you start the race on, like, the first turn. Like, you're already ahead of everybody else. Whereas baseball, like, Roman Anthony could be great as great. But if Crochet blows out his elbow and they don't have a pitching staff, it won't matter. You'll be Mike Trout. You'll be some generational talent that just
wasting away elsewhere.
Yeah. So give me Drake May every day.
Okay, there you go. Drake May and his red jacket. Andy Hart will take those every single day. And for our third three-point stance, joining us, linebacker out of Alameda, California, Mr. Ted Johnson. Good afternoon, Teddy.
Good afternoon, boys. How are we doing?
Here he is.
What's going on?
Good to see you guys.
You ready to roll, buddy?
I'm ready to roll.
You breathing heavy like Stiz? I had to call Stiz down from the kitchen. You know, what's that, like 40 feet? By the time he got down here, he could barely talk.
You're such a liar.
No, honestly, winded like you were coming off of Mount Washington.
You're not the only one, Stiz. You can probably look it up in your archives there. It happened to Adam Jones earlier this year. He forgot he had a live read and he ran in, and he could barely speak during the live read when he ran
in. Our commercial breaks are only, 3, 4, 5 minutes. I got to get those raviolis heated up.
Every day, you and the raviolis. Might explain the way.
I
got to carry the ninja in from the producer's box to the kitchen to get my pizza going. Go.
All right, Teddy, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here is 60 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, guys. So at the beginning of the season, I was mocked and made fun of for suggesting that the UNC might want to let part ways with Bill Belichick before the season started. They're 5 games in, and I still feel strongly about that take. My ultimate overall kind of thing I want to say is that it probably would be smart for UNC to buy out Bill Belichick at the end of the season, even though he has 2 more seasons left on his contract. I don't know if you guys saw what happened this past weekend, but Clemson handed it to him pretty good. And there's a lot of fallout from what's happened in the offseason to start this season. And I guess Hulu had a season-long documentary that they were going to do on the UNC football team, but that has now been scratched. That is no longer going to happen after the start of this season. And it's interesting to me, when you see what happened with Mac Jones over the week, last Thursday, doing what he did. There's a lot of heat. There's a lot of kind of spotlight on Bill Belichick. I think it would be smart. It would be smart for UNC to part ways. I really do. North Carolina through the first 5 games, they're 2-3, and they have lost to the opponents of the Power Five power conferences, 120-33. They have Cal coming up next week. It would be smart for UNC to cut its losses. It's a lot of money I know that they have to part with, but at the end of the day, it's just not worth it at this point.
Bill Belichick has done it again.
As we like to say, I have thoughts. First of all, you just made me remember, Ted, speaking of things we were right about, we speculated last week. First of all, did you know that they have a bye Clemson and then another bye week? What is that all about?
How does that work?
Two byes surrounding a game in which they played a superior opponent and got absolutely. Yeah. Ted, did you love when it was 28-3 in the first quarter and people online were like, Belichick's come back from that before, guy?
Yeah.
Is there anybody
in the locker, not even the locker room, on the sideline going, hey, we got. What's the quarterback's name? Will Johnson? I don't know what his name is.
I think it was Will Johnson.
We're gonna be fine. We're gonna come back.
No one in the stands by that.
Was nobody in the stands. The place was empty late in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. All those season tickets you've been raving about—they're useless because there's no asses in those seats. Tailgate.
You got the money for them.
Oh, is that what this was about?
It doesn't look great.
Was
on
it
TV.
Full at kickoff and then it was empty by halftime?
Oh yeah.
That's brutal. Disgusting.
Can I read a quote from Bill before they were promoting this Hulu documentary that is now not going to come out. This is what he said in regards to this promotional video that was put out, kind of just again promoting the Hulu documentary that again is not going to come out. He says, quote, "It's going to feature players working hard, which you guys do. It's about the players improving and getting better through their hard work, which you do. And a program starting from where it started." How many games did they win last year? They were 7-4, I think, last year, right? So a program starting from where it started from several months ago to where it's going to go during the course of the season, which, of course, we determine on the field. It's going to show our commitment to winning. It's going to show our commitment to the team, and that is our priority. I don't feel that that's been true, they're committed to the Bill and his staff are committed to this team.
So my assumption, Ted, is, and I saw this today and I was wowed by it, my assumption is they've been recording for a while now. If they plan on it coming out and you're August.
There's a lot of tape being scratched.
And that is also
I want my hands on it.
Want to see that.
My idea is Pablo Torre needs to get in contact with the sound guy, with the video guy, with the camera guy, because those guys have tales to tell. If they've been behind the scenes of this debacle that we're getting little snippets of, and we're going to talk more about this a little bit later at 5:30, but we're getting snippets of parents being told not to approach the head coach or players being treated in different sort of stratospheres based on. Also stunned me that the quarterback's making $2 million a year. He is not very good.
Wait. $2 million a year?
Gio Lopez,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he was a
from
transfer.
From South Alabama.
Correct.
$2 million
a year. He stinks.
Yeah, he's not good. He's making that's good money if you can get it while you can, because you may not make a lot of pro.
He's making half of
money.
What Drake May's making to stink?
Yeah. And to stink on that
20% level. 20% of Belichick's you know, his salary is what the quarterback that's not playing is making.
Yeah.
I wonder how that makes Bill feel.
But it is a debacle, and I still think the exit is they're going to figure something out. I know there was a joke online. Dan Ball?
We actually have a sneak preview. We thought that all the stuff was, all the audio was destroyed. A sneak preview of some of Bill's play calls from year two. Next year, what it's going to sound like. Go ahead, Stiz.
We need two McDoubles, large fries, and a Coke. Make sure those fries are hot.
That meme was
wow.
That meme got some circulation on the Johnson family text.
Bill sounded younger.
Yeah, you know what happens. It's they touched it up in
when you date a younger girl, you AI, know, you yeah. date, you know, you sound younger.
But there was a joke on socials that like the health scare that he's planning is going to make Urban Meyer blush. Like that's how they exit.
That's
this.
Their exit. Yeah.
He has a heart thing.
Meyer was done after 13 games in Jacksonville, so that was basically 3/4 of an NFL season. Does Bill finish this season?
I can't say fully yes. I can't fully say yes at this point because it's getting ugly. And I don't know if you
getting.
Guys, once you click on one of these stories in this college football world, all of a sudden your Twitter feed is filled with podcasts from, I never knew there were so many podcasts about UNC football, but there's all these guys ripping them, all these local reporters, all these stories,
which,
the 24/7, the On Three, the whatever the hell they are.
And the thing is, local reporters in a college town like that, they are going to give the benefit of the doubt to the coach for as long as they can, because they don't want to, you know, cover a guy that's going to be there for a long time that
Correct.
They've criticized.
I think they now know.
And now they are the dice cast, they know, and so they're leaning into it pretty good.
Oh, open Daniel. Season on Bill
oh,
Belichick.
Oh, Daniel, the writing is on the wall.
Yeah, I'm hearing there's no culture, no organization. It is a complete disaster.
A complete disaster.
It's local TV, Ted, right there.
For,
coming through.
You know, $10 million a year plus doubling your NIL
That's
budget.
Guaranteed 30.
Oh, yeah. Guaranteed $30 million.
How'd you like
to
be a booster
disaster.
That paid into that?
You know who looks really good through all of this?
Mac Brown?
Yeah. Mac Brown, immediately he tweets out, like,
good
praising Drake May, and everybody's like, hey, how come the current coach can't do that? He looks good. You know, I don't think it's easy to win at UNC, and Mac Brown was good enough. He would get you to a bowl game every year. You're never going to win the conference or a national title, but at least he wasn't a complete disaster like Bill Belichick.
And also Mac Brown, a big enough man to actually tweet out Sunday night or early Monday morning how proud he was of Drake May, as opposed to, I don't know, waiting until lunchtime on Monday for University of North Carolina to finally come around and get over the Belichick No Patriots Twitter ban and actually say something nice about him, which I think, by the way, you want to talk about Richard Petty or, you know, Petty Kruger, that is the hilt of it. That is the absolute hilt.
That's a very good point, Fitzy. We'll end on that on the 3-point stance segment. Up next, Ted Johnson's here. Ted Talk. He has lots of thoughts about Drake May and this big Patriots win that, I don't know, a couple people on the show actually predicted. We'll talk about that next here, TED Talk, WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
A little different rejoin. Not Stiz's typical style.
Name that band, Andy.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Nailed it.
It's actually, did I really get that?
It's Ramondre Stevenson's theme song.
That's right.
Give it away, give it away, give it away now. I was going to say, like, slippery
cheap
fingers
shot.
Or something. That was a cheap shot. That was not very nice, Fitzy.
Oh, I liked
falls,
it. I
falls
liked
in
it.
Line with your recent trends of picking the Yankees, picking the Bills, taking cheap shots at Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah, screw New England.
Foxborough faithful, my ass. Nick Fitzy Stevens, fanboy. Andy Hart, Ted Johnson also alongside. It is 3:30 on a Tuesday. Ted's here, and he has just been frothing at the mouth for like 24 hours to talk about this Sunday night football game, the national TV coming out party for Drake May, so we can hold back no longer. It is time for Ted to talk.
It's time for a TED Talk.
In a pothole that time in the form of Ted Johnson.
This was a disappointing play. Patriots had momentum.
From three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson.
This guy is one of the best inside linebackers in football.
It's like playing hide-and-go-seek with the football. The snap of the ball, said hike.
On WEEI Afternoons.
And as always, TED Talk is brought to you by Boston Prolotherapy. If joint pain has you riding the bench, do what Ted did. Eliminate your joint pain with Dr. Franke of Boston Prolotherapy. Online at bostonprolotherapy.com.
He's the best, Andy. Al Franke, go see him. His office is in Stoneham.
My elbow right here.
There you go. He fixed my tennis elbow. Like I couldn't believe how much pain I was in, and gone. Now it doesn't work for everybody and for everything, but you get a free consult with Dr. Yeah. Franke. He will tell you whether or not he thinks his treatment will work. If not, he will tell you where to go so you can get the proper treatment you need.
Tell him Ted sent me, right?
Rare is it that somebody says, this garage can't fix your car, but I'll recommend one that can.
That's the high-quality person that you're dealing with Dr. Franke.
Dr. Franke, I'm going to be like, when I get to like the 13th or 14th rep at 225, it really starts to
throw. Oh, sir, you suffer from extreme hardoism.
you know what? I don't know about you, but it was killing me. It was when I sleep on my side. And so your elbow's underneath, all your weight's on that elbow, and it was just shooting pain. Yeah. And so now I can
sleep. I get woken
up
in the night.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll sleep better.
My problem is when I wake up.
Then it's all downhill from there.
Shoot. I don't know what to say about that. Help you out that one, bub.
All right. So, Ted, great game.
Tremendous.
Great job by two of the hosts on this show predicting that the Patriots could go to Buffalo, would go to Buffalo, and get a three-point victory.
Do you remember what our score predictions were? I don't know if you
got was 31-28. You were 23-20? No.
23-21, I think. So.
You were close. Yeah. You were off by one point. Nice job, Ted. At least we had faith.
Yep.
Unlike the others. You know, Stiz likes to pretend he's like the Chelsea boy, you know, footy pajama, Patriots for life, and he's picking Josh Allen in the Bills.
I thought we'd make the spread. I didn't see us winning outright. So, hey, congratulations, Patriots. Let's hope we keep up the momentum.
All right, so let's start here with Drake May. I feel like based on everything we've seen for the last 2 days, social media, national, Drake May was the story of the game. Drake May, what'd you see from him?
I saw a brilliant game. I saw a game that he built off of from the game previous against Carolina. I thought he was great against Carolina, but he was even more spectacular against Buffalo. So he's playing the way that I thought he could play, but he just was inconsistent last year, and the wins weren't coming, and the rest of the team wasn't that good. But this year, it's a much better team. And he's doing special plays on top of just making the average play more consistently, which is great. So I am surprised, but I'm not surprised by all the love that he's getting recently. I couldn't believe what I was reading on social media. You guys have been talking about the last 2 days about how people are on board with it.
It's a waterfall.
But I'll be honest, if you just kind of like watch his game, you know, I watch the condensed version on NFL.com, right? Yeah. The game replays, and you see him under center, and then you see him doing boots, and then you see him, making plays as he's getting tackled, and you see him like throwing off platform 40 yards downfield where Diggs is catching it with just barely getting two toes in, and you're just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. It's almost what is so amazing about it. Like if you watch, we all watched, a lot of us watched Mac Jones on Thursday night. He had a great game, but it's kind of clunky. It doesn't look easy. Look, Drake May, the way he does the fake handoff here, put the ball there, pull it back, play action, it looks so seamless and so easy. That's what is so amazing, is just how effortless it looks like he has to play to be as productive as he is, if that makes sense.
The fluidity of his athleticism.
It's so fluid.
Yes.
Fitzy. And he checked off.
Fitzy. Gosh.
Fisty is his good name. We're just going to stick with Fisty from now on.
Fisty. Okay, Fisty.
It's not a good nickname.
But you never know. Depends on what circles you roam through.
Yeah.
All right.
But we had talked about some boxes he needed to check off. And the boxes were win. You need to win more.
Correct.
You need to do it with the game on the line.
Correct.
And most importantly, you need to not screw it up, not have the turnover with the game on the line. He checked all of those. And so I, I, I get why he's getting so much hype nationally. Mm-hmm. This was, if we're going to, I said to Fitzy, if we're going to get excited about that fourth quarter for J.J. McCarthy, that one little fourth quarter, yeah. right? When everybody said, J.J. McCarthy has it. He's
I
the
saw
next
it in his eyes.
The whole thing.
He told us he was going to bring us back.
Well, if you watch Drake May go to Buffalo against Josh Allen, an undefeated football team in front of Bills Mafia on Sunday night with those fancy white jerseys and everything. Like,
they look good, didn't it?
That's an impressive performance.
Yeah, but now they're going to only remember the stinking Maybe. Taste of defeat. Maybe. Ted, I thought of you first play. Because you love those little play action and boot. And that first play was a play action to the right side of the line, and then he rolled left, booted to the left side of the line, quick completion. And it was just like he took the profit. He looked so good. He gave them what they thought they were going to get, which was going to be a student body to the right, but then he rolled left. It was great. That told me Josh was in the bag early on.
Hold on. And real quick, and I'll say this, that first play kind of gave you a preview to what the rest of the game was going to. So it was a bootleg, moving pocket, which he's – Do you see how good he was on the moving pockets?
Or
out of the pocket, and he threw it to Steph Diggs, who caught it at about 5 yards downfield, made a guy miss, and then gained another 7. The catch and run. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Steph Diggs, 100 yards last week, 146 yards this week, and everybody you listen to, he brought the juice basically all week long, leading right up till Sunday Night Football. We got to see it as viewers on the sideline with Melissa Stark, and most importantly, on the field, where, again, 10 completions on 12 attempts. Like, the efficiency and the rapport. Steph Diggs and this relationship with Drake May, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so the Buffalo Bills going into this game were the third-ranked team in yards after catch, and a lot of that was Khalil Shakir, and he had a couple catches and runs, but nothing that really hurt us too bad. But it was Steph Diggs' ability to catch and run. It was phenomenal. There was a lot of things. This was the Steph Diggs game, if you will, because I thought he set the tone. I loved his interview with Melissa Stark before the game. I just liked where his head was. He was intense, and I described it in the post game on NBC Sports Boston as kind of like the term they use in hockey is sandpaper. He's kind of that sandpaper player for this team, gritty, tough. Just agitator, but in positive ways, doesn't do anything that's going to get you a flag. And I just thought he set the tone with his mindset, and it seemed to rub off on the players, which was evident to me. But his play was incredible. So now we go, was he a slot receiver? Or he's lost a step, so he's not really a boundary receiver. He's playing basically boundary and slot 50-50 at this point. And we're all wondering, does he have a go-to guy? You know, is it good that he's spreading the ball around, that he doesn't have one guy he can go to? I think after this game, it's been pretty clear and pretty evident now who, moving forward, his go-to guy is, and that is Steph Diggs. And good luck, good luck trying to cover him, because he's a tough cover. What he was doing so well, and I talked this in the Ted Neek portion of the show last night, is he comes back for the ball.
Yep.
He runs his route, and then he comes back for the ball. That play... that second and 9 play there, that the Patriots are down 10-6 in the third quarter, and that bomb to Steph Diggs on the right sideline. If that play was, they blitz from the left side, it was an overload blitz, and you saw the Drake May felt the pressure, so he flushes out to the right. Steph Diggs had already kind of run his route. There was nowhere.
Right.
And so he sees his quarterback scrambling. He pivots around his coverage and loops around and runs another about 15 yards downfield to an area of the field where it's away from the safety, away from his coverage, and the only place you could pretty much throw it and catch it. And you saw Drake May kind of point, like, go, down.
Mm-hmm.
And, guys, that kind of, you know what that's reminiscent of?
Josh Allen.
And Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, where guys are on the same page. So it looks like, even though Steph Diggs claims he only knows half the playbook, that those two are on the same page. They're simpatico, much like a lot of us, what we thought DeMario Douglas was going to be for Drake May.
Who?
That's Steph Diggs. So a brilliant game, and I believe, my guess is, Steph Diggs going into that game was the fourth most efficient receiver in the NFL. My guess, that put him up, propelled him up to number one after that performance. We will see, but an amazing game by Steph Diggs, and he set the tone with his attitude before the game.
All right, that's the tent poles of the offensive success in Buffalo. Coming up next on TED Talk here on WEEI Afternoons, we got to get to the defense, because they certainly played their part in holding Josh Allen and the Bills in check. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons rolling through a TED Talk coming off of Patriots 23, Bills 20. Now we got to get to the defense, Ted Johnson. Let's talk about some pass rush. Let's talk about some Milton Williams and the guys up front.
Let's do that. So the pass rush, even though Josh Allen was only sacked once, he was pressured 42% of the time.
Ooh.
So there's a reason he was getting flushed out. I thought they had a decent game plan, even though Josh Allen did rush for what he had, 9 carries for 53 yards.
Yeah, a couple chunks.
No touchdowns.
Nope.
But in nothing that really hurt you. He had the longest one he had was for 19 yards. But the pass rush, again, only one sack. But they're pressuring the quarterback. And if we'll talk about that Marcus Jones interception there in the red zone. Barmore beat a double team to kind of just get his hand up and impact the throw. It doesn't show up in a stat sheet necessarily. I mean, it goes in pressures, but not the pressures aren't really on stat sheets. So that was a big play. So that even though the defense started off hot with sacks, they led the league through the first 2 weeks in sacks with 8. They have cooled down. They only have 2. However, you have Milton Williams and Christian Barmore, who are top 10 in pressure rate in the NFL for interior defensive linemen.
Mm.
So that bodes well. A couple other things to focus on with the defense. The linebackers are starting to play better. Okay, so they led the league in missed tackles through the first three games.
Yep.
And the last 2 games, they've really, really gotten much, much better in their tackling. Robert Spillane, who we questioned the first few weeks of the season, is this guy really all that he's was advertised? He's starting to play like the guy that was advertised. He's a tackle monster, and he's also forced that great fumble on Keon Coleman down in their own side of the field to give the Patriots a short field, which was great. The Marcus Jones interception, I just want to talk about what the Patriots did. So the Patriots are not a heavy blitz team now. I think we know that now. There's enough evidence that would suggest that. After the first game, they blitzed all the time. The last 4 games, not so much. So they're getting pressure with 4 guys, which is ideal. But they're doing a good job. The secondary is playing so much better. They were the worst passing defense through the first 3 games. They were giving up the most passing yards. The last 2 games, I wonder what the difference is. What's happened the last 2 games?
Gonzo!
Maybe Christian Gonzalez coming back has certainly helped. But they did a great job of disguising on that Marcus Jones interception going into they were, I think, on the 18-yard line. And they showed cover 2 to start the pre-snap, okay? And then they rotated to a cover 1 rat. I don't want to get too much.
Is that a rat you threw in there?
There's 2 rats on the play. You have a deep middle of the field safety rat, who was Jalen Hawkins, and then a short middle of the field rat, who was Robert Spillane.
I thought Vrabel didn't like rats.
It's maybe they don't call it rat, maybe because he doesn't like rats. Maybe they call it mouse.
Okay, perfect.
Or so. All right, yeah, we called it a rat when I played. And it fooled Josh. Josh thought he was covered too. And so when I think it was Shakir who made that in cut, he didn't know that there was a rat coming down to trap. That was Jalen Hawkins. But it was a terrific individual effort from Marcus Jones to undercut and make that play. The defense is disguising really, really well. They're not missing tackles anymore. They were the worst defense in the red zone, one of my key categories, and I harp on all the time, third down and red zone. They were 88%. Anytime you got into the red zone, pretty much, if you're a team playing the Patriots defense, they scored.
Mm-hmm.
Not in this game. They're only 50%. That's a big difference. And getting that interception in the red zone from Marcus Jones was huge. So those are the main things. The pass rush is still very good, even though Josh Allen beat you a little or got some yards with his legs, but nothing to kill you too bad. I liked they put a spy on him at times, Spillane and Gibbons and Christian Ellis, and they did a good job spying. So forcing fumbles, forcing turnovers. They won the turnover margin. It's the first time in 27 games that the Buffalo Bills lost the turnover battle. They had gone 26 straight games where they were either even or had won the turnover battle. They were minus two in this game, and so that that was great to see from the defense. So the defense is starting to look like, dare I say it, a top 10 type defense now that Christian Gonzalez is back.
And you're getting return on investment. Milton Williams is one of the best defensive tackles right now in pressures in football. Robert Spillane is suddenly piling up tackles. And on the linebacker level, suddenly you get a little depth there. You get Tavai back in the mix. Gibbons has come on. Even Ellis, I thought, played better early in this game. And I always thought in your heyday, not that these guys can carry the jocks of any of you guys, some of the best parts of your linebacker cores were the depth and the ability to put the right guys out there situationally, get them off the field.
No doubt.
You might be starting to develop that for Zach Hardcore, the defensive coordinator. So one of the things you wanted to talk about with this football team right now is some resiliency. Where are we seeing that?
So this team in the past three, four, 5 years is once they get down, they usually pretty much put a pin in it. They're done. But that's not the case. They were down a couple score, or they were down in the Miami game a couple times. They fought back and won that game. They were down in this game and fought back and won. If you look at their stats, the first half, only 1 for 5 on third down. They were averaging 4.4 yards per play, 0 for 2 in the red zone. They had fumbled. You know, Drake May was 9 for 16, 85 yards, 4.4 yards, I already said that, per pass play. It just wasn't, it wasn't looking very good. And then they come out in the second half, completely different team. I mean, Drake May, you know, hair on fire, lights it up. And so I've always described it, like, to be a really good team or a good quarterback, Peyton Manning could throw 3 interceptions in the first half and then come out and throw 4 touchdown passes in the second half. You don't let the bad mistakes pile on. You readjust, you make adjustments, and you go out there and you kick ass in the second half. I like the resiliency I'm seeing from this team. In a hostile environment, being down 10-6 in the middle of the third quarter, to come back and win that game, to me, shows character. If you do it once, you can do it again. And if you've done it twice already this year, that reminds me of a team, of my 2003 team that I played on. Now, you know, we got to see a whole
heavy
season.
Heavy comp.
Whoa. Just in the resiliency department, where we would be down, we'd go into the fourth quarter down a lot of times. We never panicked. The Patriots did not panic in this game. I love that. Drake May got more locked in, more focused. He wasn't getting skittish. He was very calm under the pressure. So I like the resiliency I'm seeing. The defense played great. The Drake May, Steph Diggs connection looks like it's on point. And so I understand kind of the fervor for this team, because they're playing the way a lot of us thought they would play before the season started. That first game against the Raiders just took the wind out of the sails. A lot of us couldn't believe how bad that performance was, but they look like a completely different team today than they even did 3 weeks ago, which is pretty incredible.
Thank you for coming to his TED Talk. Up next, we got to talk about that fervor that Ted just alluded to. The Patriots are great. The Patriots are going to win double-digit games. They're going to the playoffs. They have a young quarterback, and they have a first-year head coach. Which one of those guys is driving this bus toward the postseason in Foxborough? A little debate there next here on WEEI Afternoons. Don't shake your head at me, Ted.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly what people it's outside not, of Cleveland, you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.